Jack Spierka with the Survival Podcast. Welcome to an episode of Friday Flashbacks. After 15 years and hundreds of interview shows, we decided to run them as flashbacks every Friday. Beginning with the oldest of them and going forward, there's a tremendous library of wisdom in all the great interviews we've done over the years. So sit back and enjoy. Whether this is your first time or even your second time around with today's episode, I'm sure you will enjoy it and learn a lot from it. And remember, you can help support the Survival Podcast and the work we do just by becoming a member of the Survival Podcast Members Support Brigade. If you do that, you'll get access to over 70 awesome discount codes on products and services you likely already use. Things like seeds, cannabis products, food storage items, custom roasted coffee, and even cool stuff like ammo and moonshine stills and more. So support the show, get all your money back and more. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more and sign up. Now let's get into today's Friday Flashback. And today we are flashing back to September the 29th, 2011. This was originally episode 752. It was titled Courtney Clay on Unschooling. Courtney is an awesome gal. She was unschooled for her entire childhood, received great benefit from this method of self-directed learning. We explored in this episode the concept of unschooling and how self-directed learning can empower young people. And while I take a different approach, we take a different approach with our grandchildren, I would say that they are 50-50 structure and unschool. And what I mean by that is that we do run an organized, structured program, and I think with both of them, it's really important that we do. These are not kids that are highly motivated to learn on their own. So having a structured program like Excellus works really well for us. That said, they get whatever they want or whatever they need done in about 2 hours a day if they actually do their work. And then they have freedom for the rest of the day. But we also will say, like, hey, for the next hour, go learn something. Go do something that's educational. But do anything you want. But don't watch videos of other kids playing on YouTube or something like that. Go play. But go learn something. Go do something. And so we take a blended approach. And I think that it's important to not block out things that you're not going to do just because you're not going to do them, because you may find elements and unique components to them that are useful. One way that you could use this, even with a child in regular school, like going to the government school, is to say, you know, I want you to pick one thing a month that you're going to learn about and tell me about it. I don't care what it is. It can be how to play football. It can be how to make food. I don't care what it is. It's anything you're interested in. As long as you can demonstrate to me that you're learning, go pick something and do it. Well, what should I do? I'm not going to tell. See, that's how you make. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You know, is this a, I would say about the only thing I would give a child in that situation would be, is this okay? And if it's like, what I'm going to do is watch YouTube nonstop or play video games nonstop and learn which color of blue I like best, that I would probably say no to. Courtney would probably say, yeah, go ahead. So I think that we can all learn from each other, and I think this is a perfect example of that. And I'd like to encourage everybody out there one way or another to get more self-directed learning in front of your kids. With that, let us flash back now to September 29, 2011, and revisit this episode with Courtney Clay. All right, folks, as I said during the introduction segment, we're fortunate to have with us today Miss Courtney Clay. Courtney is a person who was unschooled her entire childhood, and she received great benefit from this method of self-directed learning. She's now 29 years old. She has a two-year-old son of her own. She's enthusiastic about other things like sustainability, nature-based community, self-sufficiency, enjoying wild food, and all of nature's healthy free gifts, and growing and preparing her own nourishing food. She also has an awesome blog I was checking out earlier today in preparation for the interview. It's at chocotrixie.blogspot.com. I'll have links to that in the show notes. But she's here today to talk to us specifically about unschooling, something you guys know that I'm pretty passionate about since I've learned more about it. Courtney, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Thank you.
Well, we're glad to have you here.
I had a lot of problems with people, I think, in debate on the blog after the episode I did on unschooling, where I kind of said it's not really set in stone exactly what it is, but what you guys are debating isn't what I said on the show. I'd like to get from someone that actually has been through it, and I'm probably planning on using it as at least part of your own kids' upbringing. What is unschooling from your perspective?
Unschooling is based on the perception that humans naturally have a very strong drive, innate drive to learn, and that's one of our, you know, just as we have certain innate mechanisms inside of us that cause us to do things that for survival, we also have this innate mechanism inside to learn, and it awakens as soon as we're born, and we see this often in everyone sees it in infants and toddlers who are just have this practice and practice and practice, like crawling and rolling over and walking and talking and just go at it over and over again, no matter how many times they fall. And what's underneath that is this incredibly passionate drive to learn. And unschooling is based on the understanding that, you know, if someone allows that natural process, then that's, and doesn't try to, you know, prune it or direct it in a way that it doesn't want to go, then what's going to flourish is genius. And it will be a specific kind of genius depending on the person and their, you know, maybe their mission in life or their life path or their interests or their personality. And that's why it can be, so many children feel so stifled in a school environment, because it's trying to make everyone the same and make everyone tailor every single person to having the same skills and the same abilities. Whereas, you know, a child, if they were left to their own devices or really encouraged and provided, given the resources and the support to learn what they're truly interested in, they will become geniuses in certain areas. And like me, for example, I know a lot of things about the things I'm really interested in, and I know enough about the stuff that I'm, you know, have had passing interest in, or other people might think I need to know. So, yeah, I guess that pretty much answers your question about what is unschooling. It's based on an understanding and an honoring of our natural drive to learn from the parents.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, but, you know, the naysayers say things like, and I thought I addressed this pretty well, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Well, but, you know, they need to learn reading and writing and math. And I don't disagree, but I don't think that anybody in this movement is talking about making sure kids don't learn these things. I think actually if a kid wants to learn about something and is going to make reading part of that learning, well, then obviously they learn to read by learning about the subject.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's what I've, my experience, it was me and my two younger sisters who were all unschooled during our childhood, and we also had, you know, quite a good group of friends, who were also unschooled. And what I've experienced in my own life and also seen in my friends' lives is everyone wants to be proficient in their world. Everyone wants to be a master and to be, you know, recognized as someone who's, you know, in the know and someone who's masterful and looked up on and respected. And everyone, you know, children crave that, teenagers for sure crave that, just that recognition from their peers that they know a lot in the world, and that admiration. So I think that desire will actually propel children and teenagers to actually want to know about, you know, reading and math and various things that are skills that they're going to need in the way the world's structured right now. I mean, you look around and there's words everywhere. I mean, it just makes sense that a child would see that and wonder about it and like, oh man, what does that mean? Like, I want to know this. I want to know what it means, and also to know how to use numbers in the way that our society uses numbers, because everyone wants to be a masterful person who can easily navigate through the world in a very graceful and smooth way. And like what you were saying also, it's definitely true that if someone is interested in a certain skill and that skill requires reading or numbers or, you know, math or writing or something like that, then the child will be very motivated to develop that skill just because their interest seems to require that at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I look back to my high school experience, and I think about, like, the math, and all the math they said you're going to need in your future, and turns out I really haven't needed it, and I can tell you that I've learned more practical mathematical applications from things like taking wood shop and metal shop, and participating in shooting sports and brewing beer, than I've ever learned from a conventional mathematical education. Not that I don't think we should teach fundamental mathematics, basic, you know, multiply, divide, add, subtract, memorization of 1 through 12. That stuff, we use that every day, but to me, some of this higher math, unless you're if you're interested in being an engineer, well, then that makes sense to me. But if you're not, we're really not all going to use calculus every day. We're just not going to, in my view. So if it's dependent on the skill sought, I guess that the student has a lot more compunction to try to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I actually have a good story about the math part in particular. I was, as a child, not all children are like this, but as a child, I actually enjoyed, I enjoyed going off and on with, you know, workbooks, like, you know, math workbooks and writing workbooks. I thought to me, it was a fun game. And I went back and forth with them, like, sometimes I was interested, sometimes I wasn't, and that was okay. Either one was okay with my parents. So I learned basic math at a pretty early age compared to most children, but that was just because, you know, that's who I am, and that's my sisters were later because they had other interests. I learned all the basic math up to like maybe high school math or something, when I was younger, and there came a point when I was 15, where I wanted to learn how to read music, and I found out that my local community college actually gave, you know, music theory and music reading classes, and I just thought that would be really fun to go take some classes on music theory and guitar and piano. So I looked into getting into this community college, and I found out that they required a college level entrance or high school, you know, basically a high school graduate level entrance exam for people who don't have GEDs, because I didn't. I was only 15. So I studied for this exam, which is probably really similar to the GED, and I found that the reading and writing test were totally like my level, like I'd already achieved everything that they, and I passed those tests really well. The math, I knew it was going to be an algebra test, and I had not studied any algebra up to that point. So I got this little workbook that's called the Algebra Survival Kit. It's like this little thing that's meant to basically teach you algebra in a very short period of time by making it very, you know, very sensical. Like it really makes sense and it's learning in a certain way. So anyway, I studied this little booklet for 17 days, a little over 2 weeks, and I passed this, I'd never studied algebra before that at all, and I studied 17 days worth of algebra in my entire life and passed this, you know, high school graduate level college entrance exam, easily. And I realized from that experience that this subject that children take 2 years to learn in high school, it was easy for me to do in 2 weeks. And it just showed me how it takes so long to learn something if you're not interested in it, because you have to be, you're thinking, always wanting to think about something else, just being drugged through these things, just kind of, you know, trudging through it and not even wanting to be there and you don't retain that information. That's why it takes so long, because you have to they just have to force it into those children who are not really interested in it. I was able to learn it in 2 weeks because I was really my goal.
But you were motivated. You wanted to take a class on music. And I guess, see, my problem with the whole modern education system is if you want to take a few music classes at a community college, why the heck do you, I mean, it's great that you did it, and it's great that it's possible, and it's sure an example of how we've made something take 2 years that can be done in a few weeks if we actually just made it simple. But my other question is, why the heck do we have an education system today that says somebody who wants to learn about music and art and culture needs to know algebra?
I agree with that. I was actually in college for 4 years from when I was 15 to 19, and all I studied was music and theater because that was all I was interested in, and I didn't bother with any, you know, basic courses because I didn't care about those things. And another thing is, you know, that algebra I studied in 2 weeks, I never used any of it again.
Yeah, I've said that basically I can teach you all the algebra that you need to know for living in daily life in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's simply how to make somewhat complex problems broken down and simple, where we take things like back to a factor of 10 or whatever. And I could literally teach anybody with basic mathematical understanding that in 15 minutes on a whiteboard. And that is your daily life. And I think most people look at it and go, well, I know how to do that already. I didn't know that was algebra. And I think that, but you know who taught me that was an accounting teacher, right? That's who taught me that when he's going, if you're looking at a financial statement, you just want to sum check everything and make sure it makes sense. You do this, 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 and this. And by the way, that's algebra. And I was like, you just tricked me into learning algebra. And I took your class as a math credit so I wouldn't have to, but cool. So just overall, as someone who's been through the unschooling lifestyle, and I guess you're planning this for your kids from reading your blog, what are some of the benefits that you've, you know, gotten from this compared to people like you see around you that were schooled in like modern society's method?
I think the main benefit is a very strong sense of inner self-direction. It's a listening to this. For me, I find that it's very easy compared to a lot of people around me who went to school, like people I know really well. It's very easy for me to feel to recognize that I feel inspiration when I think about a certain thing, and then just feel really confident in just diving into that subject full on, knowing that it's important that I do that because of my inspiration. And it's also important, I mean, it's also easy for me to let go of the fact that I don't have interest in certain subjects and then just accept that that's just not part of what I want to do, or it's not part of my reality. Around me, I see a lot of the people who went through school, especially the people who really struggled with it and rebelled and didn't like it. I see that there's a little bit more of an underlying kind of internal, like they almost have like this judgment of themselves or an expectation that they should be doing something, but they don't want to. They want to do something else, but they don't feel confident enough about being able to do the thing they really want to do because they were never encouraged to do that thing as a child. So they end up doing something. They end up just trying to get away from it all and escape, you know, playing video games or just spacing out on various things because they don't feel like they can be successful at what they really want to do because they were never told that they could be. They always were told that they had to do a certain thing a certain way. And for me, I've been able to just recognize that I want to do a certain thing and then just go for it and find myself, you know, find success in my experience of that because I just feel confident that I can do whatever I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, what I hear you kind of saying is, I refer to this way in the show all the time, is breaking the rules. And I don't mean breaking the rules like there's rules that you can't go to a bank and take somebody else's money out. That's a legal rule. But we also have these societal expectation rules that I call them, where people feel like I'm expected to conform to this particular template. And if I'm not going to conform to the accepted societal template, then I'm going to conform to one of the other anti-societal templates, like being a loser and playing video games. And that's actually an accepted norm for someone that's going to go ahead and classify themselves as a loser in their own mind.
Yep.
So even when they're not conforming, they're still conforming. And what you're saying is you're going to do whatever you want, whatever makes sense for you, however it makes sense for you. And if there's not a clear path, then you'll go educate yourself on the how to create one.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing that's like the
same. Well, that's just terrible. I mean, if everybody did that, what kind of, oh, wait a minute, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Just think about how interesting our society would be if everyone was really honored their uniqueness and really delved into what they are really inspired to do and create, and then we all just shared that with each other. That sounds amazing.
What's it like for you now as a grown unschooler interacting in a world where most people have gone through the modern education system and therefore see life through a different lens? You know, one that's like, it's not based on a freedom-based life perspective like you have, one that's more based on this, you know, rule-based society. Do you look at everybody and think you people are freaking crazy? I mean, because I do. I wasn't even unschooled and I think they're crazy. So you might think they flipped out of their lids or something.
Well, I don't really see them as crazy. I just see that they were programmed in a way that was not, you know, not supportive of their life force. And I actually see their, you know, see their struggle that they're going through. And it's I mean, I see it like I'm kind of outside of something, like some, a lot of people were kind of indoctrinated into a certain programmed model of reality that, and I'm seeing that, that model of reality from outside of it. And at the same time, I can really feel where the individual people, like I have no, you know, I have no really respect or compassion for that system at all, but I do, you know, I do have compassion for the people who are, have, you know, for, are kind of like indoctrinated into it, because I feel that they really, you know, want to break free of that. They don't even, a lot of them don't even know they're in it. And so it's been really important for me to really just be able to just reach out to people as, you know, because we're both people. There's not really an innate difference between me and another person. It's, we're both the same, you know, we're both from the same source. We're both of the same life energy. So I, and a lot of my, my, especially since I became a teenager and beyond, I, a lot of my interests have been in studying people and studying the psychology of people and belief and what, how our beliefs influence our, the lives we create for ourselves. And it's helped me really understand and have compassion for people and actually be able to help, help people in a, you know, in a sensitive way. So,
you know, you're making me rethink some things here. I've always, like, gotten on this stuff about the everybody go to college thing, and I won't rehash that here because I think everybody listens to the show knows how I feel about that. But, and I'll always point to myself and say, well, I've had plenty of success without it. And people will say, well, you had the entrepreneurial spirit or whatever. And you're making me just think I had the I don't know if it was stubbornness or what, to resist the programming that was within the school. Like, I would just do enough to get through it, and just still, basically, I probably unschooled myself without being familiar with the term throughout school and afterward. And this, this special quality that people are saying is attributable to people that are successful without college, build businesses and things like that, is really more of a resistance to this, this programming system, which I personally feel, I don't know how you feel, I personally feel our school system is designed to create workers to go into institutionalized jobs today. That's the entire point.
I think that's definitely the exact purpose of the education, the modern education system. And I think the people who, I mean, it's unschooling, it's, it doesn't necessarily mean that, I think unschooling is a mindset. I don't think it's necessarily somebody who never went to school. I think that a lot of people, or some people who are going through the whole school system are, have unschooled themselves, like you were talking about, because you, you recognize that you, that your essence and your, you know, potential was a lot bigger than, you, you recognize the system for what it was, and then recognize that your potential was a lot bigger than that. So even though you were kind of, you know, interacting with that system, you weren't, you know, you weren't of it. Kind of like you were in that world, but you weren't, but not of it.
Well, you're going to one of my favorite quotes there.
Yeah.
I love that quote. I'm in this world, but not of it. And that's, you know, I never really thought of it. That's how I felt in school. Like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
This is just something I have to do because they said I have to do it. And as soon as I'm done with it, to hell with it. And I wanted to go in the Army, and I needed a diploma to get into the Army. So it was, it was a quicker path in than quitting and getting a GED 6 months later.
Yeah.
And I do think that a lot of people that are resisting this are resisting it. And again, I want your opinion on this, because they have so much vested in it. When you tell a person has a master's degree, that, I mean, let's be honest, that, that's taken a serious commitment. And they, and if they're in a, if they have a master's in something practical, like engineering, they have a really specialized skill set. And maybe it's not for me, maybe it's not for you, but it, it's a noble pursuit. And what they hear people like you and I saying is that that whole system is wrong. And I think what we're saying is that whole system isn't right for everyone.
Yeah. And well, and the system, I think the system is fine in itself. It's just the way that people use the system is, it can, you know, determines whether someone's, you know, self-sufficient and happy, or if they're, you know, a slave and depressed. Because I see a lot of people, I mean, you can use the system for your benefit. Kind of like I, you know, I use college for my benefit. And there's all sorts of systems in the world that we can use for our benefit. And I would say that if somebody, you know, studied engineering and has a master's and an engineering master's degree in college, and they're enjoying their job and they're successful at it, I would say that they use that system for their benefit. But somebody who is within that system and they define their whole life based on that, like they, that to, life to them is school, job, you know, marriage and children and then death. If someone's like that and you know, and that results in this like hopelessness and depression, I think that's where the system is harmful. Is it when it becomes bigger than you, you know, when it becomes bigger than a person, that's when it's harmful. There's nothing innately harmful about the system in general. It's just that who are we conscious of being in relation to the system? Are we bigger than that? And can we just use it as a tool every now and then, a lot or not at all, depending on, you know, whatever we want to do? Or do we see it as something that controls us?
Yeah, I agree. And I'm thinking about how people are actually starting to snap to this themselves now, as these kids are coming out of school with $100,000, $200,000 worth of debt, and they're getting jobs for $29,000 that they could have got out of high school,
yeah,
if they get a job at all. And it makes me think, you mentioned one of the quotes that I really love. Let me give you another one here. A guy named Arthur Schopenhauer stated, "All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. And third, it is accepted as self-evident." And I think that what we're seeing right now is the initial stages of violent opposition, as people have gotten past ridicule. You know, people said, "Oh, this has got a problem," for years, and people just said, "Ah, poo-poo." And then once enough people kind of hit a critical mass and start to point out all the flaws, then because the system's in place, there's money, there's vested interest, all of these things together, you get to violent opposition. And I'm just wondering if, like, you know, 50 years or 100 years from now, people will look back at conversations like this and go, duh.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. I mean, that's how every new idea, every new advanced idea has come about. Is you know, it's ridiculed because people don't take it seriously because it seems to be a small force. But then the violent opposition comes from the fact that they're, oh my God, they're recognizing this to be a very powerful force.
They know the truth. What do we do, right?
They're sensing the truth behind it. And, you know, violent opposition is the last stage a system goes through before it dies. I mean, if you think about, you know, the struggle before death, that's what it goes through, because it's in a way it's dying. It's being exposed for its flaws, and it's the basis, which is not based on truth, that the whole system is constructed on. So, it's like a lot of things these days, the education system is being exposed for its harmful motives, and people recognizing that, you know, well, maybe this is not the only way of doing things, and maybe I can think for myself, and maybe there's a better system.
And I don't think people understand the money that's involved, even at the secondary and the primary education levels. I read a report on the city of Dallas a few years ago that the city of Dallas was spending around $12,000 a student per year, and there's millions of students just in the city of Dallas, and their failure rate, students that begin kindergarten in the city of Dallas and do not graduate high school, is 50%.
Wow.
No other business on the planet, even in most government agencies, could operate at that cost to failure ratio. It just wouldn't happen. And yet we have a society telling us, but we have to preserve something with a 50% failure rate that cost us $12,000. And okay, then the other, you know, take the other side of that. So that's $120,000 across 10 years of school, and then do a little algebra and figure out the rest, and you're looking at about $200,000.
Yeah.
Per student, with half of them failure. So our cost in the city of Dallas, for those that don't think I've learned math because I didn't go to school, is about $400,000 per graduate. And you can go to any college on planet Earth and get a PhD for that price.
Wow.
And yet this system has a failure rate of 50%. And that's why I'm like, you know, the old Susan Powder thing, stop the madness. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, that's amazing.
And I mean, my concern is, you know, how do we fix it? Not everybody can do what you're planning on doing. I didn't homeschool my son. I didn't even know about most of these concepts through his school years. I always would, like, sit down when he had a project and go, okay, this is what you got to do to pass. Tell me what you actually think. But do you have any tips for people that maybe can't take the full step?
Yeah.
And homeschool or unschool, as to how they can, like, encourage this in their child while a system's trying to beat it out of them without creating a complete rebel that can't even walk through the doors.
I do have advice for families who are maybe don't have the time to be at home with their children all the time at this point. I mean, there's a style of education called Waldorf. It's based on really recognizing the natural way that children learn and what they're really ready for at certain times. And it's very whole brain oriented. It has as much to do about with creativity and art and just creative thinking and imagination as it does with the, you know, the left brain stuff, the logic oriented stuff. So, and I found that it's not that system. Like it's a different thing. It's structured, but it's so much more like unschooling, and the children have a lot more freedom. So, I'm not sure how many actual Waldorf schools there are in the United States. But I'd even did a little bit of that just with a few friends, and I really enjoyed it. So that's a possibility. There's even, might even look into a type of school system called Montessori. It's a little different. It's more freedom based and more whole brain based, similar to Waldorf. And really, I think I think it's very unnatural for families to be by themselves, away from family, away from friends, living in a house, having to work so much just to survive. I think that's very unnatural. And I think that makes it hard for people to do the type of, you know, teach children and be with children in the way they really want to and the way that's really helpful. So I think the solution in our future that's going to solve the education thing is, creating nature-based communities where our like-minded family and friends are living, on a big piece of land with us, and we have eco-villages, and we have our own space, and our children learn together, and the whole village raises the children. And they could even create their own internal schools that are very freedom-oriented and teach certain subjects based on the interest level of the children, and we could create our own. As long as
I think that's extremely empowering, and I want to. I've been reading this book that a listener recommended called Early Retirement Extreme, which has been totally different than I thought it would be because it's far more philosophy than financials. And one of the things that hit me in this book is he said, as society has evolved toward, and this guy talks, if you know anything about permaculture, he talks about society, and he doesn't use the word, but it's very permaculture-esque.
Yeah.
You know, society is operating at a climax stage. And we've got to a point now where both parents work, nobody's home, all the things you're talking about. So we've turned to the institutions to handle raising and teaching our children. So
exactly.
we institutionalize our children. And he said, and it makes you think, oh crap, what have I done? Because my kid's 22 now and I can't start over. Is it any surprise then that our children, when they're grown and that the elders need help, they institutionalize the elders. We've taught them to do it. How can we be mad at a child who's 50 that puts his 80-year-old parent into an institution because when that child was 5 years old throughout his entire young adult life, his parents placed him into an institution. Not in a not like a mental institution, but it's been an institutional based care system. So the child has learned conditionally that's what you do for care is go institutional.
That's so right on. They're just reciprocating in the way they believe is, you know, the way things should be.
It's not a vendetta. It's just, well, that's what I learned to do. I have to work and I have to do things every day and I can't be here to take care of you. So I need to send you someplace to get taken care of. And that's exactly what we're telling our children. And I don't have a quick fix for it because there's a lot of people out there that are in two-income families that they put themselves in the debt trap. They have a long way out. By the time they get out, they may not – at that point, you know, your kids may be grown, and that's kind of how it ended up for me because I came to this stuff late. But so I don't have an easy solution, but I think that we need to take a more active role in our learning, and I don't think that's always just helping kids with school projects.
Yeah, definitely. These are really important things to think about, and they're all interconnected too. The education thing, the education dilemma is connected to our working hard to survive dilemma. Like the fact that, like you said, both parents and most families have to work. And it used to be that, the mother would stay home with the children and actually raise the children, and that's just not the way it is right now. I mean, even like a few weeks or months after a baby is born, a mother will often go back to work and put her, you know, put her infant in daycare, which I think is just absurd, insane. And that just shows how, you know, if there's a system in place that's, then, yeah, that's unnatural. And
I think it's unnatural. And the village dynamic that you were talking about, the community dynamic you were talking about earlier, it's amazing how books, again, that don't seem like they're going to talk about these things do. I just read The Paleo Solution by Rob Wolf. And he was talking about how our ancestors, not just what they ate and how they worked out, but they didn't really work out, how they got their exercise from walking to visit other villages, from hunting, from building things. But obviously they didn't spend 100% of their time, you know, running away from bears and killing deer. They spent a lot of time laying around with each other and had this sense of community that we don't even, is completely foreign to us now. And if you have that dynamic going on, whether you're teaching algebra or how to grow a green bean, you have hundreds of teachers in essence, because every person that learns a skill now becomes a teacher of that skill. So there can be a 5-year-old educating a 4-year-old on a given skill set, and the 5-year-old is going to relate to the 4-year-old better than the 40-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's actually a couple schools. There's a school in Russia. It's called the Shetanin School. I choose to know how to spell that. It's run by Andrei Shetanin. It's basically a child-directed school, like, where the children actually come up with work together to come up with the curriculum, and they help each other out. And the adults who are around just kind of hang out and make sure that if anyone needs any help, then they're there to help. And the children are the teachers and the learners. And it's often, you know, where an 8-year-old will be teaching a 5-year-old, or 11-year-old will be teaching a 9-year-old something, or even the other way around. If someone, like a 8-year-old could be teaching a 10-year-old a certain subject. And it's amazing, you know, those, because they feel in charge, in the way that school's set up, because they feel in charge of their learning experience, they're really, really dedicated and very interested and very passionate. And there's actually a DVD, it's a 20-minute little DVD about that school. It's actually called The School, the DVD is. And if I had more information about it, I'd give it to you. But maybe you can post that somewhere after the thing, because it's very inspiring.
No, I'll look that up. I'll look that up, and I'll make it part of the show notes. That's awesome. And the other thing is, I just look and I go, well, for the first 100 years of America, that's how public schools in America were. The teacher basically taught what we would today call the 12th grader. The 12th grader taught the 11th grader, and so on.
Yeah.
And kids weren't separated. They were put into – and I think people look today and go, well, we can't do that because we have more kids. Well, it's all about how you – I know I didn't go to college or anything, but it's all about how we divide up groups of 40. We can divide up groups of 40 in that mixed age environment, or we can sterilize and sanitize everything. Because I don't know, when I was in like fifth grade, I wanted to be like the seventh graders, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the seventh graders would have been teaching me. I would have, you know, and they were, but they weren't teaching me school stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
they're teaching you. Bad social influences.
Yeah, but if we could channel that somehow,
yeah.
And I think we could reform public schools. I just think that people like you that are taking things in your own hands are right. We don't have time to wait. We can work on that, but I think I don't know, as more people that are unschooled, homeschooled, win science fairs, win scholarships, at some point the society has to look to that and go, well, if they're wrong, then how come they achieve more than everybody else?
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think it's 100%, but I think when we look at percentages, they're significant enough.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to argue with.
Yeah, well, people say, a lot of the people who are noticing that actually they achieve more in many subjects than school people, that they are very intelligent, and that's the education thing isn't an argument anymore. They turn the argument into a socialization thing, like, oh, well, how do you socialize your, and that, you know, for me, that comes back to community. And if we're not like actually living in a physical eco village at the time, we require other things, like finding our local community in the city or town we're in. And there's plenty of ways to have continuous social interactions as an unschooler or a homeschooler. That's just, It's just that you're actually choosing the, you know, the social atmospheres rather than it just being, you know, spoon-fed to you. I was interested in ballet, so I went and took ballet classes and made a bunch of friends, and I was an ice skater. I went and did all that and made a bunch of friends, and I went to local homeschooling and unschooling play groups and made a bunch of friends. And I did all sorts of stuff because in a way I was actually, when people talk about the real world, but these people who are, you know, in school for 13, 15, whatever, however many years of their life are kind of actually isolated from the real world. I was actually in the real world. I was out, you know, taking classes, meeting my neighbors, just exploring in the actual world because I had the time to do so, the time and the freedom to do so. So in a way, I grew up in the real world, and whereas people in school, they kind of grew up in a building.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because you're bringing up a really interesting dynamic there. Because they say all this about all this great social skills kids learn in school, and what it is the popular kids learn how to stay popular, and everybody else learns how to be crapped on, if we want to be completely honest about it. That's why we have kids today that are killing themselves from being bullied in school. So
yeah.
I don't know how great the socialization training is there, but as far as real world, unless I've been so programmed by the system that I don't realize this, if I work at a place and I just think, I don't like my boss, I don't like the people I work with, all these people are jerks and I don't want to be around them anymore and I don't like what's going on here, then I leave and go to a different job.
Yeah.
Well, when you were in your activities, if you had gone to ballet and you didn't like the people you were having ballet with, well, maybe you would have said the heck with this and went and took tap classes and decided maybe that or something totally different. But we put these children in these schools and they end up around other kids they do not want to be around that are bullying them or bad influences or simply are not the type of person they wish to associate with. We force the association for 13 years.
Yeah.
And then we go, gee, it doesn't work. I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Or, gee, there's kids being bullied. Or because if you put enough kids together, somebody's going to be the bottom and somebody's going to be the top.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when people are pent up and unhappy in a big building, that's a lot more likely to create, you know, to make passionate leader, you know, natural leader children into bullies. And I mean, the bullies might actually, their energy might be being distorted too by the unnatural system that they're being placed in and the fact that they have a lot of passion and they take it out on other children. And then of course the ones who are being bullied they're being disrespected, and it's just unbalanced for everyone. You can view it as a victim and victim and perpetrator, but really they're both being, you know, they're both in a bad position. They're both being victimized by the system.
I agree with that, because the person that ends up being the popular jock or the cheerleader or whatever that's the mean kid is got themselves into a system now where the last thing they ever want is to be cast down out of their little clique. Mm-hmm. So they have to retain behavior that's unnatural for them to stay in that popular clique. And everything and everyone in society is telling them this is where you need to be, where if we remove the forced associations, people can actually behave like human beings again.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in the real world. You don't have one guy walking around an office flicking other kids in the head, you know, other adults in the head, right? Because it doesn't happen, but it happens in every high school in America.
Yeah, there's something about the school system that's it's creating this little bubble reality. Like it's not actually, and it's not as it's so convenient and so it's a certain way. And I think a lot of people who go to college and they get a degree and then they end up, you know, wanting to keep going to college, keep going and keep going. They become, I'm sure you've heard the term professional students. They basically keep going to college just because they're afraid of the unpredictability of, because it's this little convenient system where everything's predictable. But if you go outside of that, everything's unpredictable and random, kind of like, you know, life is. And a lot of people are scared of who have grown up in this predictable environment and who have been kind of domesticated in this environment. They grow up in that, and then they go out into this big wild world where basically you create your reality and you're, you know, it's all up to you, and it's scary because they didn't grow up in that. So they become professional students and just keep going back to school so they can get more money going back to school.
And I guess if you go there long enough, sooner or later they'll get tired of it and they'll offer you a job teaching. You go from student to teacher's assistant to teacher, and people live their entire lives on a single college campus. And I do think that there's something there. We look at, like, hunter-gatherer societies, and we call them primitive. But an 8-year-old child in a hunter-gatherer society knows how to build shelter, and they know what they can eat, what plants will kill them, what plants will be medicine. They know all of these things that the average person, if you kicked them out of the city for 15 days in a fairly benign environment, you'd find them shivering and starving, right? Or dead, right?
Yeah, they'd be dead in a week, most people in that system, because they're so domesticated. And you're right, the primitive tribe, they knew real life skills, like the children did too. I mean, my son, my 2-year-old son, he just turned 2, and he's in nature a lot, and he already knows, the edible plants and the things that he's not supposed to eat or touch, and he knows what they're called, and he's amazing. I mean, it's amazing what a 2-year-old can know.
Well, because they want to know, and I think that's what we're beating out of it. I kind of want to shift gears a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about your blog here as we finish up today. Your blog is called Ecstatic Mothering, and I think that's just awesome. And I was looking at one of your posts from earlier this year, and it was called Radical Nourishment for Your Magical Toddler, and I just thought that was really cool. So what do you mean by radical nourishment for your kids?
Mostly talking about just viewing us as this one, a being, is fully alive being who's in this part of this interconnected web of life all around us, and how all of the life around us is actually designed to nourish us. And it's a lot more than just, the food we put into our bodies. There's so much more. And it's about, recognize, in a tribal people, they recognize their interdependence with the well-being of our planet. And there's so much that nourishes us and contributes to our genius and our optimal development and our strength and vitality. There's so much more than just the little, the nutritional science that we've been, spoon-fed from, modern science and school and college and things like that. There's so much, we have so much more potential, and that's what I'm thinking about, is how to, as I raise my little boy who's a toddler right now, I think about all the things that he does. I mean, he's naked most of the time. He gets sun on his entire body on most days. So he has a deep tan at age 2. He's constantly breathing fresh air. He drinks wild harvested spring water. He walks barefoot. And actually, there's so many things, man. He walks barefoot, which actually promotes optimal foot development. Putting children under age 2, and especially under age, even under age 8, putting their feet in, like, hard-soled shoes actually will mess up their entire alignment of their whole body, because they don't have bones in their feet. All their bones are actually still cartilage. They're still soft and still developing. So it actually shapes their foot to have them in shoes. And so my son, he's been barefoot since he first started walking, and now the only shoes he wears are little moccasins, which have soft soles and still provide optimal foot development. There's all these just little things, and, wild food and growing our own food, just all sorts of things that to me are radical forms of nourishment, because they're outside of the box. People don't think about them when they think of nourishment.
Absolutely. It's a completely different way of looking at things, but to me it's also like life's a circle, and all you're saying is, all the people who lived before us pretty much lived this way, and it was only in our arrogance that we created this false sense of what a society is supposed to be, and then tried to shape people into it. The other thing I was just thinking of is listening to you talk about all this. I've never actually heard a large group of homeschool parents say that they have huge problems with children with ADD. It's almost like the problem doesn't actually exist at all.
I don't think it exists. I think it only exists within the school system.
I don't understand how it actually could exist, because all of the symptoms are just normal childhood behavior.
Yeah, exactly. But people are trying to mold their children to not be children. So they're saying that being a child and that the child's natural, you know, innate, you know, way of being is a disease. So because that's a trick, you know, that's a mind trick. So that to say to them that this, the way you are is not right. So we need to change you, so that you'll fit in, or you'll be able to survive in the world. So that's how people start to try to change their true natures, by early on being diagnosed with a disease. You know, what's more psychologically manipulative than that? It's just a mind game. It's not even real.
But you know, the more you talk, the more you're making me rethink some things, and I'm just seeing more and more at any time than ever this fallacy that school teaches kids what the real world's like. It absolutely teaches them what the real world's not like. And what I mean by that is, let's say I was doing a seminar and you decided you wanted to learn about, wolves, and I was talking about wolves, and you came to my seminar, and you're a free adult, and you sat down at my seminar, and I came up to the microphone, and I said, "Today, I am here to teach you about wolves. Wolves come in gray and black and white." And people out there right now are ready to put a gun to their head to stop it, right? And what would you do? Would you sit there for the 40 minutes that you're required to, or would you go, "I don't even care that I paid $19 to listen to this fool. This is 40 minutes of my life I'll never get back," and you would walk out, right? So in the real world, when a subject is uninteresting or not useful to us, we simply avoid it. And in a school system where a subject is uninteresting or boring to a child, they are forced to sit there through it. And I know there's certain fundamentals we have to teach our kids, but I don't think it's 8 hours a day for freaking 12, 13 years to get those fundamentals taught.
And a lot of it, I think, is the way the information is being presented that makes it so boring and so uninteresting, like you were saying. If someone's learning about wolves by a guy who's talking like that, I mean, what if somebody was learning about wolves by, like, climbing their tree and, like, observing an actual wolf in the distance? That's way more exciting. And you'll probably learn a lot more than learning from some guy who thinks he knows about wolves who's obviously not excited to be there.
Or you got tricked in the first place, and you came there to learn about wolves, and I get up and I'm even a great teacher, and I go, "And today we're here to learn about the wolf spider and its entomology," and you're like, "Wait a minute, that," and sometimes I think courses are that way. Like, you look at a course and what it's supposed to teach you, and you think, "I'm supposed to come out of this engineering course able to do engineering," and you really don't learn engineering in the engineering course. Or you go to the accounting course, and they say, really what you're learning for the first 3 years is bookkeeping. You'll learn accounting in your fourth year.
Yeah.
And you feel just like that happened. Yeah, we're here to learn about the wolf spider or wolf-class submarines or something. Wait a minute. That's not really why I signed up.
Yeah, and like the fact that that's, you know, medical students, like doctors, only study like a tiny, tiny percentage of hours in actual nutrition. They don't really study the way the body works, you know. Hell, they just mostly study drugs and surgery
and memorize every part of the body at, you know, and the anatomical name and things like that. But yet, if you ask a doctor what is the prescription for optimum health, most of them have no.
That is not what they're taught. They're taught about how to treat disease, not how to create optimal health.
Yeah, you know, we were just watching the show called The Shark Tank, where entrepreneurs pitch their ideas. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but they have people there, like Mark Cuban's one of the sharks, and you pitch your idea to the sharks, and they decide if they'll buy into your company for what you're asking at a certain percentage. And this guy had these little things that he's selling apparently in the Middle East that you basically put on your nose, and they're like a filter for allergens and toxins to keep them from going into your nose. I don't know that I would wear one, but apparently some people will, and in these countries where people are wearing masks, it's much less noticeable than a mask. And they said to him, "Why are you here? If this works as good as you say it did, why didn't you take it to pharmaceutical companies?" And he said, "I did." And they said, "Why would we prevent it for $1 a week when we can treat it for $14?
The truth comes out.
And I actually still have that on my DVR, and I need to cut that segment out and stick it on YouTube just
That's
for people
awesome.
To see it. But I think that is a metaphor for everything we're talking about today. Why would we teach children algebra in 17 days when we can get $10,000 a year per student to make it take 4 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Because we could use this, like, you know, I don't know what you pay for that book, but I'm thinking under $20.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that this is really more than anything else about conformity and money. And we want a society of shaped people who will fit into the system like a cog or a sprocket or whatever. You can be a sprocket or a cog or a lever, but you're going to be one of those, and you're going to pick what that is, and you're going to stick yourself in there.
Yeah.
And I guess if you want to control a society, that's a great way to do it. But what this early retirement extreme book that I'm reading kind of compares this philosophy, I'm seeing a lot of similarities here, to a Renaissance philosophy. You know, there's in modern society, the guy says there's the businessman, the salary man, the working man, and they all have different ways they fit in. And then there's the Renaissance man that just basically learns everything that he wants to learn and can fit in anywhere in any way. And that's actually was like when the Dark Ages ended and the Renaissance came, it was what did that. And basically he says we're right now heading to a new Dark Age, where everybody is exactly the same, and it's going to take a renaissance to pull us out of it. And this sounds like a renaissance philosophy to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the Dark Age is already passing because so many people are seeing that the truth of it. So I don't think we're headed towards it. I think that we've already been through it, and we're actually coming into the new renaissance right now.
So we're like on a dawning of a second renaissance. That's a much more positive thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, folks, I really want you to make sure you take in what you've heard today, and I want you to make sure you check out this blog that Courtney has, Ecstatic Mothering. We talked a little bit about it today, but she's got a ton of material on there. Anything else you want to maybe let people know before we wrap up here today, Courtney?
Well, I still kind of remember you asking me a question earlier about you know, what do you feel like your advantages are about being an unschooler? And I said one of it's just, you know, freedom and like trusting my direction, my internal prompting. And the other thing I learned was resourcefulness, how to actually find out what I want to know. I mean, people are used to having information just given to them. I can find information. I can find anything I want to know. And I just learned, you know, I didn't learn these subjects. I learned resourcefulness so that I could teach myself the subjects. So a lot of times I tell people that, you know, my parents helped me learn how to read, and then I taught myself everything else.
I think there's a lot to say for that. I mean, what I've always said is we should be teaching children not stuff, but how to learn.
Yeah.
And if we did that, they would actually go out and freaking learn whatever they're interested in. And whenever anybody says, but then the child won't have the opportunity to be an astronaut or president of the United States or whatever, I'm like, you know what, there's 50% of society that's going to go out and work a blue-collar job anyway.
Yeah.
And I actually think if we had this freedom in our education system, some of those people wouldn't be doing that blue-collar job, and some of the people in the white-collar world that are friggin' miserable would be happily building kitchen cabinets or something.
Yeah, or becoming astronauts or presidents.
Correct. And maybe, well, we can only hope that maybe a Renaissance man would become president. That's certainly not what we have in government today, and not just the president, not just about all levels. We have people that are building a conformist system. But I think it's up to people like us to break out of it, and I think what you're doing is great, and I think that we need more folks like you out there. So thanks for being with us today, and thanks for sharing your insights.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
And if anything ever comes up where you want to come back on the show and talk about a specific subject or whatever, if there's a story in the news that relates to you and you want to give your take on it, get in touch with me. We'll bring you back on. You have an open invitation here.
Thank you very much. I might take you up on that.
Well, we'd love to have you back. And folks, with that, this has been today Jack Spirko along with Courtney Clay, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Survival Podcast Friday Flashbacks. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider becoming an MSB member. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more. You can also support our show by going to TSPAZ, that's T-S-P-A-Z, TSPAZ.com. Anytime you shop online, and while you'll support us no matter what you buy, you will find over 500 reviews of items I have personally tested and vouched for. And to stay in touch with us and never miss anything, follow our channel or our group on Telegram. You can find links to that and all our social media options. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and check the show notes for any episode.